From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, told The Washington Post this week that the president was willing to fight a potential subpoena from Special Counsel Robert Mueller all the way to the Supreme Court. Giuliani's threat centers on the Mueller team's need to interview the president and the strict conditions under which the president's lawyers will allow such an interview. The legal threat is especially significant given that Republicans are moving swiftly to try to confirm Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh by October. With Kavanaugh in place, a conservative majority would support Trump in any case that reached the court. That, along with many other critical issues, including women's reproductive rights, immigrant rights, LGBT rights, voting rights, and more, is what's at stake. The Republican Party, which stymied President Obama's right to nominate a justice, are now racing at an unprecedented pace to confirm Kavanaugh to the court by October ahead of the midterms. Party leaders have refused to release reams of documentation to Senate Democrats from Kavanaugh's tenure during the George W. Bush era. Now Democrats are remarkably resorting to FOIA requests to get access. The question is, what are Republicans hiding about Kavanaugh? My guest is Jessica Mason Piclo, Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, and former assistant director of the Health Law Clinic at Hamlin Law School in St. Paul, Minnesota, and a former litigator. Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So the last time we spoke to you, we were trying to explore who Kavanaugh was. And he's, you know, a genial, affable guy, quite likable. But there's all of this information about his judicial record during the George W. Bush years that we know nothing about. What role did he play during the Bush years? And who is controlling the release of information to Democrats?
Well, so Brett Kavanaugh is largely controlling the release of information to Democrats, along with help with a lot of Republicans. But so who is Brett Kavanaugh and what was he doing in the Bush White House? Well, we know big picture items, but we deserve to know a lot more of the details. We know he was working very closely on shepherding judicial nominations through, including helping with candidates such as William Pryor to the 11th Circuit. William Pryor, for your listeners and viewers, is a conservative along the lines of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. In fact, they are political colleagues and friends, some might even say. So that gives us a small insight into some of his judicial philosophy. During that process, he was working with Noel Francisco, who's the current Solicitor General of the United States. And these are just details that we've known from the about 1% of the total documents from Kavanaugh's time in the Bush White House that have so far been released.
Now, I understand that during his two-year tenure as Associate White House Counsel during the Bush years, there are nearly a million pages of documentation, 910,000 pages of documentation. So there's a lot for senators to look through if they only had access to it. There's an additional 20,000 pages from the time that he was working under Kenneth Starr in the 1990s. And then this is all according to the Washington Post. In 3 years as Bush's staff, Secretary Kavanaugh accumulated 2,935,000 pages of documents, including hundreds of thousands of pages of emails. And these particular documents are just not coming through and are being hidden. How unprecedented is it for any senator to use the Freedom of Information Act to gain access to information on a judicial nominee? This is a tool that generally journalists use.
Journalists, and it's often the first step towards litigation, too. It's unprecedented is exactly the word for it. I remarked in one of our pieces that unprecedented under the Trump administration is starting to lose meaning and lose value because everything, particularly when it comes to the way they've handled the federal judiciary, is unprecedented. Republicans can't, on the one hand, trot out Brett Kavanaugh's long record of public service as one of the qualifiers for his nomination to the Supreme Court and simultaneously withhold information during that time. That is just not how it works, and that's never been how it works. And we have very specific examples of this, too. Democrats worked on getting Justice Justice Sotomayor's records released, Justice Elena Kagan, and she had served as Solicitor General. So arguably as big a record in terms of emails and work on important policy questions that she was very rightly questioned about in her confirmation process. And to the extent that the confirmation process has already become shadow theater, Republicans are really at this point just making it a joke. They are thumbing their nose entirely at the Constitution. This is not something that is a, you know, small little thing that they have to do as part of their job. This is absolutely part of their constitutional responsibility. And it's not just that they're shirking it. It's that they're, you know, sort of negligently and intentionally disregarding it.
Now, the Senator Chuck Grassley, who has now led the move to try to speed up the process to confirm Kavanaugh, actually cited Elena Kagan's nomination process, confirmation process, in an op-ed where he basically said, well, we just, you know, we didn't get access to all of her documentation and information, and therefore it should be fine for Senate Democrats to do the same for Kavanaugh. What do you make of that?
I mean, that's, you know, the same type of spin that we see from Republicans about playing politics with the court when they withheld even meeting with Merrick Garland for over a year, and the way in which they are now ramming through the Kavanaugh nomination, insisting that the court needs to be able to get on with its business. What we know from the Garland nomination is the court can function just fine when it needs to with eight justices. And we also know that we have a president who is under active in criminal investigation for a whole host of potential crimes, significant enough to warrant impeachment, if we're going to pull in a Clinton analogy as well. So these are not just like political partisan questions. These are issues and questions that get to the very heart and cornerstone of our democracy.
So the Republicans do need Democrats on board to confirm Kavanaugh. And West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin first met with Kavanaugh. He was the only one for a while. And now Joe Donnelly and Heidi Heitkamp have joined in. And that makes three Senate Democrats that have met with Kavanaugh. These are vulnerable Democrats who are apparently facing re-election this fall. And they're in red states. Are you worried about what you're seeing?
Well, I am worried. I would hope that they're meeting with him. I mean, it would be a return to norms if they're meeting with the candidate, right? Republicans refuse to meet with Garland. It's fine if they're meeting with Kavanaugh and telling him that it's impossible for them to do their constitutional duty and consider his nomination seriously without full disclosure of his record.
So how many Democrats are needed to confirm, to join with Republicans, assuming that all Republicans vote unanimously for Kavanaugh, assuming that Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski put aside their support for women's reproductive rights and vote for Kavanaugh, how many Democrats are needed?
Well, unfortunately, as a result of the Garland nomination, we got rid of the filibuster and the ability to really have a procedural power block for these situations. And so Democrats are in a tight spot. Republicans only need to peel off a couple of them, and you've already named the vulnerable ones, right? Manchin and Heitkamp, and Doug Jones in Alabama, too, has indicated that he's willing and open to consider and vote for the nomination. And so I know there's focus on Collins and Murkowski as possible defectors. The reality is they've voted with Republicans to confirm all of Trump's nominees. And so we have no reason to think right now that they're going to be peeled away. I think the fact that that Republicans are paying attention to those two senators is really the indication that that's where their focus is on. And importantly, so both are in tough districts for Democrats, but this is an important and it could be a winnable fight. I mean, we do also have the analogy to the first repeal efforts of the Affordable Care Act, right? For a long time, it was sort of conventional logic that there wasn't a way to stop Republicans once they had the votes. And thanks in large part to some really great activism and organizing from the disability rights community, we saw a victory there. And so I think we have a model and a path forward to block the nomination. The question, though, is exactly the one that you posed, which is just how strong is the political will of the Democrats? And frankly, can we get a couple of Republicans to stand up? I mean, you know, it would be nice, but so far there's less sign that that's happening.
I mean, all Democrats have to do to make a case, and of course, there's plenty of justifications for why Kavanaugh shouldn't be confirmed, but all they have to do is cite the fact that a president under criminal investigation shouldn't be allowed to name a Supreme Court nominee when that very court is likely to end up judging or ruling on a case involving him personally, as you mentioned earlier. So the group Demand Justice is one group that has been pushing hard against these Democrats, these vulnerable Democrats, to stay firm against the nomination of Kavanaugh. But Jessica, I'm not seeing very much other activist action against Kavanaugh and to hold Democrats' feet to the fire. Are you?
Well, some of the reproductive rights organizations have launched a campaign and are going Rise Up for Roe. That's that campaign. And so they're going around the country and talking about the urgency and what's at stake with the Kavanaugh nomination and when it comes to reproductive autonomy. But your point is well taken, and I have to sadly agree with it. It is difficult, particularly in a news cycle that where every story under a normal administration in normal times would take 2-3 weeks to really tease out because they're such a big deal. We are seeing them happen on a daily basis sometimes under this administration. And so Republicans have really, I think, cynically and politically in a way, I guess, smartly for them, seized on this chaos and have used it an opportunity not just to ram through the Kavanaugh nomination, but to really seize control of the federal judiciary.
Meanwhile, the conservative women's group, Concerned Women of America, are on a bus tour as well, Women for Kavanaugh bus tour. And this is an organization that wants to bring, quote, biblical principles to all levels of public policy. I suppose it's a sort of Christian version of Sharia law. So they're quite active, and it remains to be seen what happens. So is there enough conservative will to push this through, to ram this through? It seems as though Republicans hold all the cards. But if they do, if they actually push through the Kavanaugh nomination, they live with the consequences of basically affirming everything that this new conservative majority on the court will do, right?
Mm-hmm. They do. And I think what has been a head scratcher for some pundits with evangelicals and their relationship to the Trump administration, I think, is becoming very crystal clear in the Kavanaugh nomination. The conservative wing of the Republican Party, the very evangelical wing of the Republican Party in particular, has seen a conservative majority on the Supreme Court as not just an opportunity to roll back Roe, but to undo LGBTQ rights as well, and other policies they don't agree with. Affirmative action, for example. There are cases, you know, there's a whole host of really important markers from the New Deal and the civil rights era that Republicans have had their sights on, and they see Kavanaugh as a way to do that. So it's one of the reasons why you're seeing the Heritage Foundation so excited about his nomination and the Concerned Women for America. You know, it should tell us everything that both the extreme business interests and the extreme religious interests are putting everything they can to get this man on the bench.
Another huge issue critical to the existence of our species is climate change. There is a huge concern that cases regarding climate change will end up at the Supreme Court and be voted in the wrong way. There's a legal case by a group of young kids who are basically saying that their constitutional rights are being violated when the government basically doesn't act on climate change, and that case has been working its way up. So many issues. Environmental groups, for that reason, are also very frightened about a Kavanaugh nomination. So much relies on this single individual's placement to the nation's highest court. And Republicans want to start hearings right after Labor Day. So unprecedented that Democrats have to resort to FOIA requests for information. And it's also unprecedented the pace at which they are moving forward, right? In a normal political process, how long would it ordinarily take? I'm assuming at least 6 months from nomination to confirmation.
Several months, at least. That's fair. I mean, to put some perspective on, you know, just how political it is, even the request that Chuck Grassley made to the Library of Congress for Kavanaugh documents that he requested for judiciary, Library of Congress said, we won't be able to collate and release those just given the volume of them till sometime in mid-October. And Grassley went ahead and scheduled the hearings for the beginning of September anyway. So he doesn't really care about transparency and having an honest debate about the issues, which I think really should give us all pause. What are they hiding, or what is it that they are confirming of our worst suspicions about Kavanaugh?
Any speculations? I know that there's been a lot of worry about his position on executive authority.
Yeah, I think executive authority is a real concern. I mean, obviously, his positions related to reproductive rights and autonomy and LGBTQ issues. You know, when he was in the Bush White House, the Supreme Court was hearing Lawrence v. Texas, the case that ultimately struck down the state of Texas' sodomy ban. And the Bush administration, while involved in Texas politics, had backed that law. And in fact, George Bush had called it some sort of like nod to traditional beliefs, but nothing that was, you know, really sort of that bad, that, you know, whatever compassionate conservatism meant at that time in the 90s. And Brett Kavanaugh was involved with this. Well, okay, so what does that mean? Do you stand by this precedent? And not just that question, because of course he'll say yes, but let's, you know, there's the ability to interrogate those questions when we have access to the information. But by refusing to provide the information, Republicans are making it impossible for us to engage in that process.
Now, there was a poll just conducted by CNN that found that the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh is the least popular Supreme Court nomination since Robert Bork's nomination by President Ronald Reagan in 1987. And so lower support for Kavanaugh than Merrick Garland and others as well. So apparently it's women that are mostly driving that unpopularity. Only less than 30% of women say that Kavanaugh ought to be confirmed. Any chance that if Republicans try to push this through, they will pay a price at the polls in the midterm elections? And if they are aware of that, are they willing to take that risk? Because at least they'll have their conservative majority in the court, even if it costs them their own seats.
Those are both excellent questions. I would hope that they pay the price at the polls. I think the primary elections that we're seeing now, particularly the most recent ones in Wisconsin and Minnesota, for example, have plenty of reason for hope, not just in terms of the outcome, but in terms of voter turnout and enthusiasm. Democrats are very enthusiastic voters at the moment because as we are all living through, it's not great right now, right? Now, are Republicans willing to pay that price? I think many are making that gamble. I mean, we've really seen Mitch McConnell's strategy from the Garland years playing itself out, and he hasn't retained the power that he has by being dumb. And so I think a lot of this is calculated. And I think in particular, they are relying on the fact that some of these districts and states are so heavily gerrymandered. They're effectively Republican supermajorities, and it's impossible nearly for Democrats to electorally break through that until there's another round of census and redistricting. And so I think that I do think that we are going to see the stakes ratchet up in this battle before they calm down.
Now, if Grassley goes through and starts the nomination hearing September 4th, what could Democrats do to delay the process? I mean, eventually, of course, the hearings would happen and there would be a vote. And at that point, if all Democrats stand together and vote no, there may be a chance that it could be stopped. But is there anything that you can think of that they could do to stretch out the hearings a little bit?
They could take a lesson from Democratic resistors in the state of Wisconsin from about the years 2008 to 2010, and they could not show up. I mean, they could physically refuse to show up for hearings until their FOIA request has been answered, until the documents have been released, until there's been a reasonable amount of time to go through them, until they've had an opportunity to personally meet with Kavanaugh to the extent of whatever satisfaction they need. You know, now Republicans have a majority of votes in the Judiciary Committee, and you know, so some of that we're stuck with, and you also, you know, run the risk of not establishing your record and things like that. But I mean, if we're in desperate times and calling for desperate measures, I think that a lot could be gained by a Democratic senatorial walkout, perhaps.
If they walk out, could Republicans still go ahead?
Well, it's certainly going to raise an interesting question. I mean, they need a quorum of majority to clear the nomination, and they don't need Democrats for that in judiciary. But at the same time, this is unprecedented. Would they? What would that look like for Republicans to just absolutely completely move forward with the nomination when the opposition party and a majority of Americans have said, we have such grave concerns about this, we're asking that you walk off your job?
Well, it remains to be seen then. I wonder if anyone has suggested that to them and if they would actually go through with something like that. We'll also certainly see if other activist groups join in. I know there seems to be so much energy at the polls, and unfortunately, elections tend to suck up a lot of activist energy. And this year, that could bear a lot of fruit. But in the meantime, what we could lose from that dearth of activism could be really, really high stakes and could have an impact on a generation of Americans. And I think this is what's really critical. Once Kavanaugh is in there, he's a young judge. He could presumably spend decades on the court, and we would have a conservative majority 5-4 for decades.
Absolutely.
We have to let that sink in.
I mean, you're right. We should hold some space with that, because with between him and Neil Gorsuch and Chief Justice John Roberts, those are men who it's very reasonable to think would be on the bench for the next 30 years.
Jessica, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to the piece that you wrote with Imani Gandhi on rewired.news about Kavanaugh. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Jessica Mason Piclo is the Vice President of Law and the Courts at Rewire.news. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, former Assistant Director of the Health Law Clinic at Hamlin Law School in St. Paul, Minnesota, and a former litigator. We've been discussing the ongoing battle to stop the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RUWithSonali.